How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. Author, Peter D. Schiff, Andrew J. Schiff. Definition of Economy. The simple definition of economy is the effort to maximize the availability of limited resources to meet as many human demands as possible. Tools, capital, and innovations are the keys to this equation. This simple definition doesn't change no matter how big an economy eventually gets, yet it gets more complicated. Allocation of savings and expansion of production. Business loans are the best use of saved capital because they tend to expand production. And it is important to understand that business loans are not the only option for society's store of savings. There are several options, such as consumption loans and emergency loans. Unfortunately, it is widely accepted that in order to spur activities that politicians and social theorists deem to be beneficial, government influences how savings are allocated. This has been accomplished by a litany of government loan guarantees and corporate and individual tax credits and penalties. As a result of these influences, individuals and businesses may be more willing to apply for, and banks may be more willing to grant certain types of loans. More of the society resources are then directed towards the favored activity. Private lenders tend to be influenced only by the financial results of a loan, rather than the political symbolism of the underlying activity. Businesses that adhere to successful models and are run by owners with strong records of achievement tend to repay loans at higher rates. As a result, these types of business plans tend to attract willing lenders. But this doesn't occur when financial performance becomes secondary. Loans made to individuals or enterprises that do not succeed in creating a needed innovation or expanding production capacity tend to weaken the overall economy by wasting the supply of savings. Though, the creation of a constantly expanding money supply and the government's seemingly limitless ability to take on debt have hidden the fact that real credit is limited by a finite supply of savings. From saving to borrowing. In addition to distorting the credit market by passing laws that favor certain types of loans and certain types of borrowers, governments also influence the flow of credit in a more fundamental matter, through its control of interest rates. For almost 100 years, the American Federal Reserve has set the base level for interest rates upon which the entire rate structure rests. By setting its federal funds rate higher or lower, the Fed does not dictate the particular rate any bank offers for every loan. But it does move the entire market up and down. The Fed was given this authority in order to keep the economy running smoothly in good times and bad. The theory goes that the collective wisdom of Fed economists could help keep the economy on track by determining the optimal interest rate for any particular moment in time. The members of the society who would favor high rates, most notably the savers, have no well-organized interest group. Their voices are never heard. As a result, there is a consistent bias towards holding rates too low, rather than too high. Low rates encourage borrowing and discourage saving. Not surprisingly, the United States has been transformed from a nation of savers to a nation of borrowers. Inflation versus deflation. There is no greater propaganda victory in economics today than the complete vilification of deflation and the relative acceptance on inflation. Deflation is defined as the overall decline of prices over time, which is considered by politicians and economists the economic equivalent of the bubonic plague. At the slightest whiff of deflation, governments will typically enact policies to push prices back up. The vastly increased productivity of the Industrial Revolution made it possible for working class people to afford all kinds of goods. Despite the obvious benefits of lower prices, people still fear deflation. People are told that if prices were to fall, people would stop buying, companies would stop spending, workers would lose their jobs, and would all return to the economic dark ages. Most people assume that deflation is okay if it's confined to just one industry. Modern economics mistakenly assume that spending drives growth, and that when deflation is present, people tend to defer purchases, and when they do spend, the diminished price makes less of an economic impact. Elastic money supply. The United States experienced sustained deflation for most of its history. Then the Federal Reserve was established in 1913. It was originally given the mission of establishing an elastic money supply. The idea would be that the Fed could expand or contract the amount of money in circulation to correspond with economic activity. It was thought that such movement could hold the prices steady through good times and bad. Even if such a mission was a good idea to begin with, it's easy to see that the Fed has utterly failed in accomplishing it. Over the last 100 years, the dollar has lost more than 95% of its value. So much for price stability. The truth is that the Fed now exists for the sole purpose of providing the inflation necessary to allow the government to spend more than it collects in taxes. The need of a balanced trade. In the late 1960s, the trade balance started to change, and by 1976, the United States began running persistent trade deficit. The dollar reserve status has played a significant role in allowing this deficit to grow unchecked. Without the built-in demand for the dollars made possible by the global economic system, no country could long sustain such imbalances. Companies and governments would simply refuse to trade goods for currency, with which it couldn't buy anything. For the first decade of the 21st century, which corresponded with the rise of China as an export economy, the US trade deficit averaged around $600 billion per year, topping out at a staggering $763 billion in 2006. That's more than $2,500 for every man, woman, and child in the US. After the recession in 2008 began, those figures mercifully started to retreat. But the US policies soon put an end to that positive reversal. With the dollar's reserve status and a decision of the Chinese government to maintain the currency peg, had gummed up the machinery and has allowed the situation to grow dangerously out of kilter. The joy and pain of inflation. It is painfully clear that the United States experienced the joy and the pain of an inflating housing bubble. Americans must take pains to remember that the vast majority of economists, government officials, and financial pundits could not see the calamity coming even as it stared them down a point-blank range. It was as if all the meteorologists in the country failed to predict a Category 5 hurricane when it was just about 10 miles off the coast of Miami. By any measure of sober valuation, home prices by 2006 had passed into fantasy land. Valuations were disconnected from every gauge that had been designed to measure their affordability. None of the numbers added up. Yet somehow, economists came up with rationales that seemingly justified the ascent. But people failed to see the agendas behind the cheerleading. Policy goals, US administrations. It is hard to overstate the impact the housing boom made on the economy as a whole. During the height of the mania, the financing, construction, and furnishing of homes had become the central dynamo of the US economy. The process turned houses into tax-free ATM machines. People used the money to renovate their homes, take vacations, pay for college, buy cars and electronics, and just generally live better than they would have if their homes had not appreciated in value. But the wealth was simply a mirage. In the 100 years between 1900 and 2000, home prices in the United States increased by an average of 3.4% per year. Prices were firmly tied to people's ability to pay, which is a function of income and credit availability. But from 1997 to 2006, national home prices gained an astounding 19.4% per year on average. Over that time, incomes barely budged. The difference was credit, which government policy made much cheaper and easier to get. But credit could not expand forever. And eventually conditions tightened. When they did, there was nothing to hold prices up. So when the market crested, the easy money that for years had poured into the economy stopped flowing. A recession was not only inevitable, but absolutely necessary to rebalance the economy. But when the economy started to contract, lawmakers and economists treated the development not as the inevitable consequence of years of easy money and overspending, but as the problem itself. In other words, they mistook the cure for disease. Economists have declared that if people can't spend, the government needs to step up and do it for them. But the government doesn't have any money. All it has is what it collects in taxes and what it borrows or prints. For now, this process is just creating a massive public debt on the open market, primarily to foreigners. Ultimately, the government will only have two options, default or inflate. Either option will lead to painful consequences. Default, which does offer the possibility of real rocking and a fresh beginning, is actually the better alternative. Unfortunately, while inflation is worse, it is also the more politically expedient. Governments have gotten themselves into trouble. Politically speaking, it is better to stiff a foreigner than to raise taxes on or deny benefits to a country's own citizens. For political leaders, default can be rather embarrassing, as it amounts to an official acknowledgement of insolvency. To avoid this, many opt to simply print money to pay debts, effectively repudiating their obligations by inflating them away. Since inflation is usually the easiest choice to make, it is often the most likely. But while it may seem easy at first, it ultimately exacts the harshest toll. Inflation allows governments to avoid hard choices and dispose of their debt of the sly. The United States today would certainly be the largest and most advanced economy to ever experience hyperinflation. But that doesn't mean that it can't happen. Thus far, our ace in the hole has been the reserve status of the US dollar. This means that the dollar will continue to be widely accepted no matter how bad the fundamentals get. But if we lose reserve status, our currency will be just as vulnerable as those that went down before. We must look at these possibilities and head them off now, before we no longer have the ability to decide for ourselves.